90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio. Streaming online at www.kkfi.org.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Welcome to Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Today, we're doing something different and unique on Cowtown Conversations. We have multiple guests from the League of Women Voters, but we're doing it with social distancing, so there's actually nobody in the studio, and they're all actually in different locations, and we're using Zoom as our platform. So our guests today are Amber Stinger from the Johnson County chapter of the League of Women Voters, Cheryl Barnes, she's with the Missouri chapter, we have Pat Goodwin, and then Sandy Eads is the president of the League of Women Voters, and he's going to be joining us later. Full disclaimer, folks, this information is for discussion about the ballot for Kansas City, Missouri, and Kansas City, Kansas, Wyandotte County, Johnson County. This discussion is to inform and educate the public about the ballot and matters on the ballot. We will not make any endorsements or recommendations about who you should vote for, why you should or shouldn't vote for. What is most important is that you exercise your right to vote and that your voice is heard and that your vote is counted. Good morning, ladies. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations.
Morning.
So if we can start by, we'll have Ms. Amber Stinger. Can you briefly tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and how long you've been a member of the League of Women Voters?
Thank you, Joseph, for having us on. We're thrilled to be here to talk about the importance of voting. My name is Amber Stinger, and I'm co-president, along with Ellen Miller, of the League of Women Voters of Johnson County. We serve voters in both Johnson and Wyandotte County. I live in Shawnee, Kansas, and I've lived here about 20 years, and I joined the League about 5 years ago. When I was dissatisfied with the state of our democracy and frustrated at the lack of responsiveness from my state representative and state senator, and I wanted my voice to be heard, and I chose the League to be my megaphone.
So, Ms. Barnes, can you briefly tell us just a little bit about yourself and how long you've been a member of the League of the Women Voters?
Sure. I've been a member of the League of Women Voters for 30 years. I joined when I moved to Appleton, Wisconsin from Colorado, and I realized that I didn't understand the issues, didn't know anything about the candidates, didn't know where to find a trusted resource. And I met people from the League of Women Voters, and they talked about being a nonpartisan organization and how they study issues. And I felt very comfortable with the work they do. And so I joined in Appleton. And then when I moved to Kansas City with a job change, then one of the first things I did was join the Kansas City League of Women Voters. And we also serve a multi-county area. We've got Jackson, Clay, Platt. What am I missing?
Cass.
Yes. And last but not least, Ms. Pat Goodwin, who's been on before. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how long you've been a member of the League of Women Voters?
Sure. It's good to see you again, Joseph.
Same here.
In the studio. I've been a member of the League of Women Voters for about 5 years, like Amber, and I joined for many of the same reasons. I wanted to be active in regards to policy and impact on government, but wasn't really in the mood to join or support a political campaign. So this seemed like a really good fit, and it only took one meeting to get sucked in by the women and men, because men are members too, that I met that day. So it's a great organization, and we're really grateful that you're giving us an opportunity to talk about the organization as well as the elections coming up.
Yes, most definitely. So Cheryl, can you tell us a little bit about the League of Women Voters and when the organization was founded?
Yes, we started with organizing in 1919, and then we formally became an organization in 1920, and that all happened in St. Louis. So we're very proud to be one of the first and early on leagues in the United States. Now, the folks in Chicago will tell you it happened in Chicago, but that's how they are. But it really happened in St. Louis. So we're very proud to be and happy to be celebrating our 100th anniversary. We think it's a great opportunity to talk about the importance of voting again on a general election year. We tend to be fairly active. We've had a lot of events celebrating both our 100 years, our centennial organizations, but of course with COVID, a lot of that has changed. So we're having Zoom meetings, but we're still figuring out ways to celebrate 100 years of getting people to the polls as educated voters.
So, Amber, does the League of Women Voters have voter education forums and programs to educate voters?
Yes. An informed voter is a more powerful voter. We work to increase understanding of major public policy issues, and we host several events throughout the year so voters have factual, nonpartisan information on which to form their decisions about important issues. The Johnson County League was part of a forum before COVID, before the shutdown, on the status of reproductive rights in Kansas. That was our last one before the shutdown. And then in September, we are hosting a forum on diversity, equity, and inclusion. We also host candidate forums and legislative coffees so voters can see and talk with elected officials and talk to those wishing to hold office.
And Pat, Cheryl briefly touched on it, but the League of Women Voters is now not just the League of Women Voters, but men are also allowed in there. When was the change, and when were men allowed to become members of the League of Women Voters?
That change happened in 1974. So we had maybe a couple generations of men who are eligible to join us, and we obviously welcome them. Our president this term is a man, and they are a big part of our effort and a big part of our success.
Cheryl, in our system of elections, we have two different elections: the primary and the general election. Can you explain what a primary election is?
Sure. Primaries happen when there is more than one candidate in a party running for a given election or for a given spot. And so that is sorted out by individuals who vote for them. So if you're a Republican, you would vote on the Republican ticket and select your candidates. If you're a Democrat, same thing, or in any of the independent parties too. It's also an opportunity to put other issues on the ballot. For instance, the August 4 ballot will include Medicaid, because the primaries are historically a lower turnout election. Lots of times politicians will put issues that they don't want to pass or they don't want to give a lot of attention to on the primary election, which is why every election is so important. Medicaid, if we pass that, will provide medical services to more than 200,000 low-income people in Missouri who currently don't have medical insurance of any type. And at a time when we're facing a pandemic, in addition to the normal ills that, you know, humans face, it is incredibly important to vote on that primary election day in August.
But also, people think Medicaid, this is not just Medicaid for those who are over 62. This would cover those who are from age 19, if I'm correct, to age 64. So it would cover those, a lot of young people who don't have medical insurance right now because it's so expensive, they can't be covered on their parents. So it's something that really would impact a lot of young people who could get coverage if this passes.
True. And it's with COVID, it's particularly important for people of color who many of whom are low income, many of whom are out of work now. It would be cruel not to pass Medicaid at this time in our history.
So,
I interject. This is an important part of league lore or our process, too. The reason that Sherika speaks so eloquently about Medicaid expansion is because the League of Women Voters has a position on Medicaid. And we only speak on issues, policy issues, that we have studied and presented to our membership and have reached a consensus. So even though we're nonpartisan, we can certainly speak to issues that we support.
What is the league's position on the Medicare for All, Pat?
Cheryl, I'm going to have to throw that to you. Do we have a position on Medicare for All?
I'm not aware of anything in particular, but I know that we definitely are for Medicaid expansion.
Okay, I'm sorry, Medicaid expansion. That's my fat, Medicaid expansion. So the league's position is that you all are in favor of Medicaid expansion.
Yes. Now, Amber, do you have that in Kansas?
It's not a ballot measure. We have been advocating. It's been a priority for the Kansas League fighting for Medicaid expansion in Kansas, but it's not. It got stalled in the legislative session.
You know, Joe, this is a good example of how our legislators aren't looking out for us. We have, all of us pay taxes, have paid taxes for years, continue to pay taxes. And the legislators, when the will of the people says, give us Medicaid expansion, having medical health insurance is so critical, they sit on their hands and don't take care of citizens. It is just so annoying. That's why registering and voting is absolutely critical.
So, Pat, we've talked about what the primary election is. What is the general election?
Well, the general election, which occurs in November, is it takes the candidates who won their party's nomination for each office, and that candidate then appears on the November ballot and runs against the other nominees from the other parties. So the winner of a race in November is the person who will take that office.
In the Republican nominee, which would be Donald Trump, and then the Democratic nominee would be Joseph Biden Jr., the winner between those two would be the person who would be the next president of the United States.
Correct. And those nominations are set, but nominations for example, the Missouri General Assembly, the State House, and the House of Representatives, or the Senate and the House of Representatives, we have primary for governor and treasurer and lieutenant governor this year. So there are many candidates running for governor from various parties. And the Democrats will pick a candidate, the Republicans will pick a candidate, the Green Party will, as well as the Constitution and the Libertarian Party in Missouri. And so there could be up to five candidates for governor in November at the general election.
Yes, Amber, go ahead.
In Kansas, all Kansas state legislative seats are up for election. So all the state representatives, all the state senators will be determined in August and November. Also in Wyandotte and Johnson counties, we have races in the district attorney's office or for district attorney. We also have state board of education races. So arguably these local races are even more important to our daily lives, the quality of our daily life, and your vote matters so much, especially in these local races.
And you are so correct, because what people don't understand is that local issues will affect you far quicker and far faster than what happens out of D.C. And then you kind of touched on the next question I wanted to ask you, which was, why is it important for people to vote? But let's dive into Kansas, because you all are a little bit more advanced than Missouri, so we probably won't have to spend as much time, because you have early voting in Kansas. So when it comes to Kansas, Amber, people don't have to stand up in line. They can, how far in advance, if you live in Kansas, can you vote prior to the election?
Well, fortunately, the process in Kansas is everyone has to register to vote, and you can quickly and easily register to vote on ksvotes.org or vote411.org. It just takes a few minutes. Once you're registered, you receive a card, a registration card in the mail that tells you where to register or where to vote on election day. But in Kansas, all voters can request an absentee or mail-in ballot for each election. So, and Kansas voters have had that option for decades. So this is not new. Johnson and Wyandotte counties, the election officials have been very proactive, and they sent mail-in ballot applications to all registered voters in May for both the August and the November elections. So if you have not received that and you are a registered voter in Johnson or Wyandotte County, you can go ahead and request one on ksvotes.org or vote411.org. You do have to fill out a new mail-in ballot application before each election. Okay, and then if you don't want to vote by mail, and then after you request a ballot, you'll start receiving your mail-in ballot 20 days before the election. So you'll start seeing it, I think, they start mailing them July 15th, so you have all that time before the August 4th election to vote by mail. And Johnson County has several ways that you can return your mail-in ballot application, as does Wyandotte County. You can even take a picture of your application and email it to both election offices, which is kind of more convenient for a lot of younger voters who probably never bought a stamp. So, and then Johnson and Wyandotte counties offer the opportunity to vote in person before Election Day. Johnson County has 7 polling places open 2 weeks before August 4th. And then Wyandotte will have 3. They all have kind of varying hours and different days. But you can get all of that voting information on our website, lwvjoco.org. And then on Election Day, if you want to vote in person, you're assigned to a precinct to vote. You can find your voting location at vote411.org. All polls are open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And all voters in line when the polls close are allowed to vote. So that's kind of the rundown.
Okay. If we have any callers who would like to ask our group voting gurus questions, give us a call on our studio line. Our number is 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI. And Mr. Eads, who is, did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, you did.
You are the president, the current president of the League of Women Voters. Can you tell listeners a little bit about yourself and why or how you got involved with the league?
I reached out to politically, and this is after I retired 7 years ago, and I said, I'm eager to get people to vote. I want to do everything I can to encourage voting. And she said, well, you could join the League of Women Voters. And I didn't think twice about it. I did it. It was kind of a shoot from the hip moment, which has turned out to be pretty interesting, to say the least, and rewarding. So that was the motivation. So it's all about turnout. It's all about participation and educating voters. That's kind of where it led.
So I'm going to go back to Amber for a second. Amber, when is the deadline to register to vote for the primary in the state of Kansas?
July 14th for the August primary and October 13th for the general election in November.
So you're saying that almost essentially up within 20 days, people can still register to vote in an August primary, while in Missouri, the date is fast approaching. It is July the 8th. If you haven't registered by July the 8th in Missouri, then you won't be able to vote in the August primary. So you are a little bit more progressive than Kansas in other ways. that you don't, you believe in voter inclusion, not voter exclusion.
Yes, we are fortunate that we have these opportunity options to vote, especially in this time of pandemic. We want to make sure people know there are safe ways, at least in Kansas, to cast your, to vote and participate.
I have to, one other question, well, a couple, but what do people need to vote in the state of Kansas? Do I need a driver's license? Do I need a voter ID card? You know, what do you need?
Yes, you have to have a state-issued photo ID, and there are some other things besides a driver's license that qualify, and you can find all that information on vote411.org. There are no residency requirements, but again, you have to be registered 21 days before the election. And then if you move or change your name since you last voted, you need to re-register and update your voter registration. And again, you can do that online really quickly at ksvotes.org or vote411.org.
One big thing that came out of this year's election, Amber, can felons in the state of Kansas vote? Because I know there's a big thing in Florida about that, putting them back on the rolls. If you're a felon in the state of Missouri or incarcerated, can you vote?
In Kansas, you are not eligible to vote while you're incarcerated, but or on parole or probation. But once you complete all that, your voting rights are automatically restored, and you need to re-register to vote at that time.
Okay. So, thank you so much, Amber. Ms. Goodwin, the League of Women Voters has a great website where you can register and get information on voting. It can tell you where your polling place is located. And this is important because for a lot of people, polling places change, especially in Missouri. Can you tell us about the vote411.org website and what people can find there?
Sure. Vote411 does kind of two things. I think what you're referring to is it's a place where a voter anywhere in the United States can go, and by entering your address, you can get all the information you need about your polling location, how to register to vote, just the basic information about what it takes to be a voter wherever you live. The other thing Vote411 does is for a local league, it can become a website for voters in the area to learn about the candidates who are running for office. So we are in the process of preparing Vote411 for the August 4th election. We have identified candidates, we've identified contact information, and we're going to be contacting candidates in the 4-county area next week to ask them to participate in Vote411 and provide information on their qualifications and priorities and background so that voters can make an informed choice when they go to the polls on August 4th.
Does Vote411 work in Missouri as well as Kansas, or is it just one side of the state?
Vote411 works all over the country, but it in terms of a voter in Montana entering her address can get information on how to register to vote in Montana and where her polling location is in Missoula. The other part of it, I think local leagues decide if they're going to go through the process of identifying candidates in their local election jurisdictions and trying to provide that candidate information to voters. So when a voter, for example, in about 3 weeks, hopefully, fingers crossed, a voter in Kansas City or in Cass County or Clay, Platte or Eastern Jackson County can go to vote411.org /ballot. It makes it a little bit easier if you go to that page, enter her address, and all the races and the ballot issues that she will see on her ballot on August 4th will show up, along with the information that candidates have provided.
And yes,
you know, one of the things that's important to note here.
Go ahead, Sandy.
Is that the work that Pat and her team does to gather information and enter it into the site allows these very different ballots that may occur in different districts, whether they're voting on a school board member or or a water district or a state representative, these things are very location specific, as you might guess. So there's a lot of information that must go in so that a voter, when they put their address in, will get exactly what they will see on election day. The other part of work that they do, and the part we really put a lot of effort into, is getting information from candidates. And this has been a sometimes successful, sometimes not, getting them to actually provide the information looking for. So there's a bit of biographical information on them. And then there's usually the ability to answer three fairly broad questions about their reason for seeking office and what they think are important issues are. When we get a good return on a particular race, then the candidates can put these people side by side and do a little research ahead of time. And ideally, that's how it should work. The tough process is actually getting all candidates to respond. So we're always looking for ways to see a better turnout from candidates themselves.
And as you mentioned that, we definitely also need to see a better turnout from people registering to vote, because I know the last election that we had in June was 10%, and about 500,000 people registered in the Kansas City, Missouri area. So you're looking at 50,000 people who turned out to vote. And what people may not know is that Kansas City has 6 city council districts. Each one of those districts has about 80,000 people in it. So what you're saying is almost a little bit more than 50% of one district turned out to vote. So it's like the other 5 districts didn't even show up enough and didn't turn out to vote. So those people who turned out to vote made the decisions for not only themselves, but for the other 450,000 people who decided not to turn out to vote. So that's one of those things. So coming to you next, Cheryl, we have a little bit, Missouri's been a little bit behind, so we're now playing catch up to Kansas. But we've also did some changes this year that essentially Governor Parsons signed a bill that will allow us to be able to do absentee voting expanded because of COVID-19. Can you tell listeners a little bit about that?
You know, I'm going to defer to Sandy on that. He's been on multiple calls on every Monday morning talking about ballot expansion and then the lawsuit we filed. And I think Sandy is our resident expert at the moment.
So, Sandy, can you tell us a little bit about the ballot expansion and the lawsuit?
Well, the lawsuit was just heard by the Supreme Court, and they found the trial court dismissed the case that the NAACP, the ACLU, and the League of Women Voters filed to give broader access to voting, and in particular, in response to the COVID crisis. So the Supreme Court just ruled this past week that the trial court was in error in dismissing the case, so they're going to return back to them for a better determination. And what we're looking for here is the ability to cast a ballot by mail without a notary requirement. Right now, as you know, there's a 7th excuse, which is for people over 65 or with a variety of conditions. Those people can mail in their ballot without a notary. What we're hoping to do is that all 6 other categories requiring an excuse in notarization gets waived. So that's the current work in front of us.
And I will read these off the Kansas City Board of Election Commissioners absentee ballot request. Item number 7 says, I have contracted or I am in a high-risk category for contracting and transmitting severe acute respiratory syndrome, coronavirus 2, or COVID-19, pursuant to Section 115.277.6 RSMO. At-risk voters who are individuals who are, 1, age 65 years or older, 2, they may live in a long-term care facility licensed under Chapter 198, Missouri statute, have chronic lung disease or moderate to severe asthma. Number 4, have heart conditions. Number 5, are immunocompromised. Number 6, and this one impacts a large portion of the community, especially the African American and Latino community, they may have diabetes. Number seven, have chronic kidney disease and are undergoing dialysis. Or number eight, have liver disease. So for people in those particular areas, no notary is required, and they may contact the Kansas City Board of Elections at kceb.org, and they can get a ballot sent to their home that doesn't have to be notarized. Correct, Mr. Eads?
That's correct.
So we're going to take a short break. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City's community radio station. This is Cowtown Conversations, and I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. And today our conversation is with the League of Women Voters. Stay tuned right back after this short break. And we're back. This is Joseph Jackson hosting Cowtown Conversations on 90.1 FM. And when we were at break, Cheryl asked a question. And Cheryl, many people are having difficulty right now. You know, they may have been laid off. They may not, you know, may need some extra money. But what a lot of people don't know is that they can make some extra money working for the election board. And I did it when President Obama ran the first time, and it was a very informing, educating experience, but also I think I made almost close to $200. It's a long day now. I had to be there at 5 a.m., and you're there till about 7 o'clock at night, but you know, it's a great experience, and it's a good way to get some, to make some money, but also to learn about the voting process. So I know in Missouri, you can go to the local Kansas City Election Board. Amber, are they also taking people in Kansas who may want to volunteer and work for the Kansas Board of Elections?
Yes, they are. Both Wyandotte and Johnson County are always looking for poll workers. They've gone to special effort to make sure that each poll worker is safe. They're trying to make it a touchless kind of voting process. They provide each poll worker with their own, like, COVID kit with sanitizer, gloves, mask, everything they need. And voters receive a stylus that on one side is a pen, the other side is like a stylus that they take with them. It's theirs to keep. So they sign their name with the pen, or they can use the stylus to mark their ballots through the voting machine. So they're trying to make it a very touchless system.
So I have to ask this question. So being involved and being engaged in the voting process, but also, as I said, being able to come out, do people receive the training that they may need so that they're qualified to help people who may come up and, you know, may ask them questions, how to do this, how to do that, when they are working for the election board, Amber?
Yes, they're doing training now in small groups online, but also there's always like a, I don't know what they call them, but like a supervisor who's at every polling place to take care of any issues poll workers may have.
Okay. So, Cheryl, what is the deadline to request an absentee ballot in Kansas City? I know you have to have it. It has to get there essentially before. It has to get there, I think it's the Tuesday or Wednesday before, if I may be correct. I may be incorrect. But there's also a deadline to request an absentee ballot. And what is that deadline in Kansas City?
I understand it's July 22nd, if I'm not correct. Pat or Sandy, jump in here. We do have all that information on our website, and that's lwv.org. So if you go to that location, you could share information widely. We're trying to make our website a one-stop shop for people who want information on the league's positions on it, on issues, and then we kind of gear up and change our focus a bit toward the elections and deadlines and things like that, so people can go to our website, or if you're on the Kansas side, the Johnson County League, and get their information on Kansas issues.
And I'm looking at, go ahead, Sandy.
A slight correction, lwvkc.org.
Okay. I'm looking at the Kansas City Board of Elections mail-in information for August 2020. It says step one, complete an application or request a mail-in ballot by in person or by mail. Step two, after receiving a ballot, fill it out and have the return envelope notarized. For those that are not in the seventh category, step three, return your mail-in ballot through the U.S. mail only. Mail-in, who is eligible? You're eligible to vote by mail if you're a registered voter. The mail-in process is, it says, fill out the mail-in ballot application, deliver it to election authority by mail or in person, receive and fill out a mail-in ballot, have it envelope notarized, return to the election authority through the U.S. mail in time for its receipt by election day at 7 p.m. And then it says some stuff to know. Request a mail-in ballot from your local election authority. Mail-in ballots may be requested in person. July 22nd, 5 p.m. is the deadline to request a mail-in ballot for the August election. Unlike absentee ballots, mail-in ballots must be mailed back through the mail. So that is straight from kceb.org, the Kansas City Election Board's website. So, Cheryl, as you come to Kansas City, Jackson County to vote, what type of ID or forms of identification do people need or can they use to vote?
Generally, a driver's license for folks who don't have a driver's license, a Missouri ID, and then a student ID and a utility bill will work.
Okay, because, yeah, you got the exact right. It says, what do I need an ID to vote in Missouri? A photo ID is not required to vote. Missouri ID for voting purposes includes Missouri driver's license, a non-driver's license, U.S. passport, military ID, voter ID, and a recent bank statement, utility bill, government check, paycheck, or other government documents showing that your name and address refer to the accepted type of IDs. And as we already talked about, unfortunately in Missouri, the deadline to vote, people, is July the 8th. So anybody who is not registered to vote by July the 8th will not be eligible to vote in the primary, which is going to be held that first Tuesday in August. So, and you must be registered to vote in order to vote. So, sure, we haven't talked about this. What happens if people are out of town on election day? Is that one of the reasons that people can actually go and vote early if they're going to be away from their polling place on election day?
Yes, that is one of the traditional and historic reasons for early voting. One of the interesting things in Kansas City is that you can say you can be out of town, and out of town might be Overland Park. So a lot of people use that so to make voting more convenient. Sandy, would you like to talk a little bit more about absentee voting?
Well, I mean, yes, Cheryl's right. I think the election board, and I think most election boards have been fairly forgiving about the six excuses to cast an early ballot. And I think, of course, we would like to see that happen regardless of an excuse, and just allow people to vote early, not just for the COVID crisis, but for all elections, because we've seen in the country there are about five or six states that are quite progressive in this regard, and they, one of the results is they get a much higher voter turnout, not only in big elections, but in the small elections. So for us, access, this is one of the areas of access to voting that we are keen to push every chance we get. So I've done this before. Of course, poll workers, we can vote at the poll on the day, or we can come down early and vote at the election board. So,
Sandy.
Yes.
Also, one thing people may not cover, what happens if you may get sick and go to the hospital, have to go in the hospital before the election? Many people may not know that they have teams that go out and they will vote. They will help people to assist them to vote while they're in the hospital. Can you briefly talk about that?
I know that it occurs, but I am not that conversant on that particular approach.
Okay, I've got it here. Go ahead.
About as much as safety does, but I know the league has helped the Kansas City Election Board on election day or the day before election to go to hospitals and maybe retirement communities where people are unable to get to the polls, and have help people fill out their ballots and then deliver them to the election board.
Thank you so much for that, because I was reading it directly from the page. It says, if I go into the hospital before the election, can I still vote? Absentee teams are available to deliver, witness, and return applications at actual ballot for voters who are hospitalized or confined due to illness or injury after 5 p.m. on the Wednesday before an election. So that Wednesday prior to, if somebody was to go into the hospital unexpectedly and they didn't get a chance to vote, they would be able to call the Kansas City Election Board and contact them and have them send somebody out to help them be able to ensure that they exercise their right to vote.
And I think that the key is to contact your local election authority, and that's the answer to a lot of questions. Contact the election authority in which you reside.
So, Sandy, in Missouri, can felons vote in Missouri?
Yes, felons can. There's only one felony for which felons cannot return. That's if they've been convicted of voter fraud. But if they've completed their supervision and parole, and then they can vote. And that's something that's been around since 2010, I think.
Okay, that's definitely. So, Cheryl, as we go back, the next scheduled election in Kansas City is the August 4th, 2020 primary election. Polls will open at 6 a.m., close at 7 p.m. The last day to register to vote is July the 8th of 2020. In-person and absentee voting begins June the 23rd. So essentially 2 days ago, people could start essentially voting, absentee voting, who may be planning to be out of the city. And for military and overseas portal opened June the 18th. So that's about a week ago. And the applications to the permanently disabled people went out on June the 9th of 2020. So, Cheryl, we've covered a lot of things right there. Are there any other things that people need to know before they go to vote? That we've talked about the ID, when the polls open. What happens if I go to my ballot, my polling place, and they can't find my name? What can I do in that situation?
A person will ask for a provisional ballot so they could go ahead and vote. And then ideally, they could get that sorted out and then go back and then say, here I am on the rolls, count my vote. But when you were talking about the ballot and getting ready to go vote, I guess I would like to introduce, Pat's Vote 411 and talk about getting a ballot ahead of time and going over the issues And the information we have on Vote 411 is from the candidates themselves. So when they're responsive, they help educate voters by talking about their issues. What we do is a public service, and Pat's group really provides a real service to the community, and it's a labor of love. So I guess, Pat, if you would like to talk about the issues and what's going to be on that ballot, that might be helpful.
Well, for August, we have identified something over 300 candidates who will be running for office just in the four county area. That does not count the candidates running for statewide office. We don't have a Senate seat, a United States Senate seat up for election this year. But all the representatives in the state, of course, we have three congressional districts in our area. The fourth, which is to the south of us in Cass County, the fifth, which is more in the central area, Kansas City, Jackson County, and then the sixth congressional district, which is north of the river. So we'll have those. We'll have, like in Kansas, as they were described, we'll have every House seat is up for election. So every congressional or House district for the Missouri General Assembly is up for election. The other thing I want to mention that will be on the ballot, because this it was a surprise to me when I had to start working on this for Vote 411. The political parties in the August primary of even numbered years, that's when political parties elect the people who will serve on their committees. So you will likely see a couple races for committee. When you get your Republican ballot, you will see candidates who are running for the committee seat for your ward or for your township. And those are important seats, too. And we contact those candidates as well to get information on what their views are so that people in their political party can make a decision about who they want representing them at the party level in the county. So I said we've had something over 300 candidates, including those candidates for political committee seats. As far as I know, we have the statewide Medicaid expansion question that will be on the election. There are also a couple elections or a couple questions in Platte County, a couple school district questions north of the river. We have not seen the ballot yet for Cass County or for Jackson County, so there may be additional questions that show up there. But usually the bulk of the races will be the statewide races, and then Congress and Missouri General Assembly, and then the political party committees.
As we always do here at Cowtown Conversations, I printed out the official what's going to be on the issues-only ballot for Jackson County for the Kansas City Election Board. Official ballot, State of Missouri, special elections, Tuesday, August the 4th, 2020. Constitutional Amendment Number 2, proposed by initiative petition. Do you want to amend the Missouri Constitution to adopt Medicaid expansion for persons 19 to 64 years old with an income level at or below 133% of the federal poverty level as set forth in the Affordable Care Act? Prohibit placing greater or additional burdens on eligibility or enrollment standards, methodologies or practices on persons covered under Medicaid expansion than those other populations eligible in Medicaid, and require state agencies to take all actions necessary to maximize federal financial participation in funding Medicaid expansion under Missouri expansion. State government entities are estimated to have one-time cost of approximately $6.4 million and an unknown annual net income fiscal impact by 2026, ranging from increased costs of at least $200 million to savings of $1 billion. Local governments expect costs to decrease by an unknown amount. And then that's the question you can vote yes or vote no on. And what people... Go ahead.
Joseph, can I add something?
Sure.
About that? One of the things, and this will be provided by the Missouri State League, they will provide an explanation of what this amendment or what this question is asking. And they will, they'll either give fair ballot language, which just makes what legally has to be on the ballot a lot more understandable for those of us who are not comfortable with legal and political language. They may also provide information on, like, if we pass this, what does that mean? Or if we do not pass it, what does that mean? What do supporters say? What do opponents say? And that's really helpful to voters to understand if a question will benefit them or benefit the, you know, their community, and if they want to support it or not.
That is so true. And I will say this, Medicaid expansion will impact everybody, especially during the time of this pandemic, who may not have insurance. They may not want to go to the hospital because they can't afford the bill. But if we do Medicaid expansion, then people will have health care coverage and it will be able to be treated instead of sitting at home, you know, suffering because they don't have, fearful of a high bill, or, you know, they just don't want to go to the hospital because they don't have it. And a lot of people right now have lost their jobs. So this would also impact a lot of people right now, families who have lost their jobs. So people need to really look at how Medicaid and expansion will not only impact them, but their neighbor and a lot of people who are going through job loss during this pandemic. And it'll be a great thing. The other thing that's going to be on the official ballot is the special election for Hickman Mills C1. This is just Jackson County Hickman Mills School District. Tuesday, August 4th, the question is, shall Hickman Mills C1 School District of Jackson County, without an estimated increase in the current debt service, so they're saying they're not going to increase the levy or the debt service, borrow money in the amount of $30 million and issue general obligation bonds for the purpose of acquiring, constructing, improving, repairing, and furnishing and equipping school facilities, including but not limited to repairing roofs, plumbing, heating, and cooling systems, security systems, playground, athletic, fine arts, parking facilities for certain existing school facilities throughout the district. If this proposal is approved, the adjusted debt service levy of the school district is estimated to remain at $1.10, amount of current school district levy right now, per $100 of assessed value of real and personal property. And what people may not understand why that's so important, when I was elected and served on the school board in 2010, this is just 10 years ago, folks, not all of our schools had air conditions. What we did as a school board is we then came out and we put in window units in every building, because that was the fastest way, because now you don't hear about those heat days, and when children are hot, they don't learn. So then that was a way of be able to do that. That was part one of that phase. What we did at part two of that phase was then went back and put central air conditioning over the summer in each of our buildings, you know, based on which buildings needed it the most. You know, we had high schools, East High School, which has a population of over 1,000, that did not have air conditioning, but now they do. So those are why those debt service levies like that are so important. You know, when you start talking about right now COVID, how are our kids going to learn? You know, those that said they can do other things with that money, but it's that money that helps give our children that financial education future that they're going to need based on wisely spending those dollars. So I would definitely say to look at it and consider it. And if you're a parent and you've been in the schools and you know what the schools need, to really consider it then. So as we start winding up, can I get a final, say about 30 seconds from each one of you so we can figure out if you have any more things we need to add and why it's important for people to come out and vote and why they should come out and vote. We'll start with Sandy, sir.
I've been here a little bit. I've worked about the last six elections, including one in June, and this was the first one I've worked, of course, during the COVID pandemic. I took away one major thing from it, aside from the fact that the Board of Elections has done an excellent job, and Amber described the same procedure in Kansas. Of making a safe, sanitary, trouble-free space above and beyond their helpful voting process assistance. And the takeaway comment was all of the voters came through and were enthusiastic, pleasantly surprised. I think they were worried about what it would be like to show up at the polls these days. And they came away with a great deal of excitement, and I think that's going to bode well for the next two elections. So I think voters can have a lot of confidence about how the Board of Elections has prepared polling places to be safe and easy to use. And it was heartening to see that kind of good response from the voters every day. So that to me is just one more reason why voting is safe and why you should not stay home. Now, having said that, we would sure like to see the mail-in ballot situation become as easy to process as possible and become in the future a regular option for all voters for re-election.
You had a question. You had your hand up, Cheryl.
No, I'm taking a picture of the screen because we don't do Zoom meetings very often. But thank you so much for your time today, Joe. This is such an important issue.
Yes, it's an important issue, but it's also something that's unique that we've did it. We've did it once, so now we prove we'll keep doing it again. We're getting out good information. Amber, do you have any last comments?
No, I just want to encourage everyone to vote. We have a lot of work left to do to make our society what we want it to be. And you need to vote the change you want to see.
And Pat?
I'd like to piggyback on what Sandy said and attach my comments to the COVID-19 precautions that we're all taking. If you decide to vote in person, which I agree, Sandy, I thought the Kansas City Election Board did a wonderful job of making it a safe and easy voting experience. But if you're going to vote in person, go to Vote 411, where you can figure out what you want to vote for, who you want to vote for. You can print out your ballot, and then it makes your time in the polling location much shorter. You don't have to read through the Medicaid expansion question. You know how you're going to vote. And the other thing is, if you do consider voting by mail or voting absentee by mail, and if we are working very hard to keep up to date on all we're learning about how this process works, so if you go to our website, lwbkc.org, and go to the absentee voting page, we're trying to make it as comprehensive as we can so that people can understand what they need to do to vote absentee by mail or to simply mail in their ballot with a notary signature or with notarization. So
thank you so much.
Safe, but also vote.
Thank you so much, Patna. Thank you all for having you all today on. We never end Cowtown Conversations without our Community Minute. It sees expectations. A local financial organization has a youth mentoring financial leadership program that is curriculum-based and challenges youth to explain their thinking through learning activities that are practical in nature, as well as real-life world lessons. They are going to be offering a virtual youth financial leadership program. It's going to start June the 29th and go through July the 15th. And if you want to sign up your child, those 14 to 21, you can go to www.seedsexpectations.org/events/youth-financial-leadership-programs. If a youth needs help with a financial scholarship, they do have scholarships available. So this program is going to start Monday. So you can also go to exceedsexpectations.org to find out more. The 3rd District will have a cleanup this Saturday, June the 27th, from 8 a.m. to noon. Residents will be able to get rid of bulky items, leaves, and brush and tires. Help clean your community. If you need to find out where drop-off locations are, please contact Councilman Brandon Ellington's office at 816-513-6511. Also, Councilman Brandon Ellington's free food distribution will be today at Mount Sinai Missionary Baptist Church, located at 3634 Brooklyn. The free food giveaway will be from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. Join us next week for another episode of Cowtown Conversations. Our guest will be Jackson County Sheriff Del Forte. For Cowtown Conversations, it's been your host, Joseph Jackson. Have a great day and stay tuned for My Place with Larry J.